Okay, good Chodesh, everybody. So this week is Parshas Truma, and we know in Truma we begin discussing the building of the Mishkan, and today we're going to talk about a Mishkan and a Beis Hamikdash that exists at all times in all places, and how that's relevant to addicts in particular. So let's start with the central pasuk of the parasha is "Va'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'soicham." It's a command that you'll make for me a mikdash, a holy place, and I will dwell there. A lot of things we learn when we're kids, I've remarked on this before, we learn them when we're young, and so we don't really think about them too deeply. But the truth is, the pasuk's a pretty startling pasuk, because Hashem is everywhere. Why do we need to build a place for him and a place that he should dwell? So the Ramban begins to explain what's the Torah's concept of the Mishkan and the purpose. And the Ramban is at the beginning of the parasha, Perichafei, pasuk Aleph. The Ramban says, "Esoyda Mishkan Hu." What's the real, the meaning of the Mishkan? Shiyah Hakavod Asher Shichein Al Har Sinai, the glory of Hashem that was present at Har Sinai, Shochen Olav Benister, should remain in a more hidden way in the Beis Hamikdash or in the Mishkan. You see it says that the honor of Hashem was on Har Sinai. And then it also mentions by the Mishkan, Ukvod Hashem Mile Es HaMishkan. So what the Ramban is saying is, Chaya B'Mishkan Tamid Im Yisrael HaKavod Shenir Lahem B'Har Sinai. So that the function of the Mishkan and subsequently of the Beis HaMikdash was to have a place that's a little bit more hidden, because it was unsustainable for there to be a continuous Gila Shechina like there was at Har Sinai, but to have a hidden and sustained presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu amongst the Jewish people that would continue what they experienced at Har Sinai. Now, we got a couple of questions to ask about this. The first question is, really, why is it so important? What's the necessity of maintaining this Gilui Shechina? That's a fair question to ask. You could say it's a nice thing. It's a nice thing to have Hashem around. It may be, but what's the importance of it? Why is that important? The next question we should ask ourselves is that Bizman Hazeh, where we don't have a Beis Hamikdash and we don't have a Mishkan, what's our opportunity for experiencing Gilui Shechina? So the truth is, if you want to look at it from a different point of view, the truth is that the opposite is the question. That it's not a matter of what kind of Gilui Shechina can we have without the Beis Hamikdash. It's how can we have Gilui Shechina so there will be a Beis Hamikdash? I'll explain that a little more in a moment. But the point is, the way one should see this is that if there would be Gilui Shechina, then there would be a Beis Hamikdash. And let me explain that. So the Medrash and Eicha Rabasi comments that the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash was actually kimcha tachina dechinus. Literally, ground wheat was being ground. Meaning, if you take wheat, you grind it into flour, and you make it into very fine flour, and then you try to grind it again, you've accomplished nothing, because the flour was already ground. And the concept that the Medrash and Eicha is saying is that the Beis HaMikdash was already destroyed before it was destroyed. The fact that the enemies were able to conquer and destroy it was only a symptom of the disease. The Shekhinah was already had already left. And the converse is true as well, that if there would be Gilui Shekhinah, if we would be on the Madrega to experience Gilui Shekhinah, there would be a Beis HaMikdash. So it's not, how can we have Gilui Shekhinah without there being a Beis HaMikdash? That's not the question. The question is, how can we have Gilui Shekhinah, period? And let's look at this in greater depth. The Nefesh HaChayim in Perek Aleph, in Chelek Aleph, Perek Dalet, he develops this theme to a great extent. And one of the points that he makes is that actually the person's own heart, the human being's heart, and their body is the Beis HaMikdash. That's actually the Beis HaMikdash within the person, that the body is kind of like the Beis HaMikdash, and the heart, where the soul and the intellect reside, that is the Kodesh HaKodashim. And let's take a look at what he says over here, because some of it is very, very powerful. So, he says as follows. Again, this is in Chelek Aleph of Nefesh HaChayim, Perek Dalet. Lazos harei kivata ikar inyan hakodesh v'amigdash, the main function of holiness in the Beis HaMikdash, v'shriya shchinaso yisparach, and the presence of Hashem Shchina, hu ha'odam, it is the person himself, shem yiskadesh asmo karoi, if he makes himself holy as appropriate, b'kiyam ha'mitzvos kulam, with doing all the mitzvos, then that person, oz hu atzmo ha'migdash mamish, uvisocho hu yisparach shemo, then that person is a Beis HaMikdash, and Hashem resides with him. And he quotes Chazal, that pasuk that we said earlier in today's shir, v'osli migdash v'shachanti b'sochem. Chazal say, why does it say v'shachanti b'sochem? I will dwell in them. Why does it not say v'shachanti b'socho? I will dwell in it, the Beis HaMikdash. So it means, Chazal learned, that no, it means that Hashem will dwell in each person, in all of them, in all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, the Derech HaChaim, the Nefesh HaChaim goes on to say, perhaps one of the most chilling and disturbing, you know, metaphors that you'll ever see in any Sefer Musar. And he goes on to say, Uva emes ka'isha chacham, in truth, a wise man, v'yavan ezos lamito, and who understands this in its truth and in its depth, libo yachol bekirbo, his heart will tremble, bechil v'ra'ada, with shaking and tremors, besumo al libo al ma'asav asher lo tovim chas v'sholom, if he thinks about, if he pays attention to his deeds that are not good, God forbid, ad heichon heim magin l'kilko v'laharos b'chet, how many calamities and catastrophes in the spiritual world it will cause. He goes on to say that har be'yoser mimashe hechriv nvucha netzer v'titus, it's going to cause even more damage than Nebuchadnezzar and Titus, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, because again, he's saying that the real Beis HaMikdash and the real Makom Hashroas HaShchina is within the person himself. So he says, Nebuchadnezzar and Titus halolo wasu v'maaseim shum kilkul klal l'mayla. Nebuchadnezzar and Titus didn't do anything upstairs. Whatever they did was down here. And they actually could only do it, as we saw, because the Jews already had lost the Shekhinah. As the Medrash Aneicha says, they were grinding ground flour. The act of destruction was already done. But he's saying, if somebody himself does averus and drives the Shekhinah out of him, then he's really destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And he goes on to say, as I said, one of the most chilling metaphors you'll ever see, we know that Titus did a great desecration in the Beis HaMikdash. He brought a Zayna into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and he committed a sexual act with a Zayna in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which of course is a horrible, horrible desecration. But Nefesh HaChaim says that's nothing compared to a person who brings sinful thoughts into his head and into his heart, because that's the real Kodesh HaKadoshim. And a person who brings that into his head and his heart brings an Eish Zara into the Kodesh HaKadoshim and causes all kinds of destruction. He mentions anger, other kinds of tivus. If he brings that into his head and his heart, so that's the greatest destruction, and that's a greater destruction than even what Titus or Nebuchadnezzar did. So let's focus for a minute on addicts. Now, it sounds very depressing, but I really don't mean it to be depressing, because, you know, in point of fact, thoughts are very difficult to control, and it's for another shmooze, you know, the Torah's idea about thoughts and feelings and actions. We just have to do the best that we can. But the concept that the loss of the Shekhinah and the Churban Beis HaMikdash is something that goes on every day within us and is far more important than the physical loss of the Beis HaMikdash, that's a concept that we need to pay attention to. And in truth, I think this is one of the primary mistakes that addicts make. The addict thinks about the actions, whatever sinful thing they're doing, whatever process, addictive or compulsive process that they're doing. So the person falls, commits the act, and says, oh, I did a terrible thing. But that's where the mistake is, because it's just like the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The symptom is not the cause. The symptom is just the final revelation of the mold and the rot that was already going on for a long, long time. Just as the Beis HaMikdash was only destroyed once the Shekhinah was driven out by the actions of the Jews, right? The addict only acts out his disease, only acts out the compulsions once the thoughts already have been distorted, and once the mind has already been corrupted, then it comes out in particular activities. But the activities, although technically are much more sinful than the thoughts, the activities are not the problem. The activities are only the symptom. The destruction and the korban happened before. Kimcha, the tchina tchinas, ground flour that was already ground. So the idea, you know, for a person in recovery, and really for anybody who wants to work on their nefesh and wants to experience the Gila Shekhinah and wants to experience the presence of the Shekhinah in their own self, which is really the true Beis HaMikdash, then the formula is not only to focus on the actions, but to focus on the destructive thought processes that people have. Resentment, for example, people harbor terrible resentment, and you can't go on harboring resentment. A person has to make a cheshbon. If it's something that's legitimate and can be corrected, you should confront whoever it is, gently and respectfully. It says, that you have to rebuke your friend if there's a problem, but you do it in a way that doesn't cause a hate, that doesn't cause anger, but you need to bring it up. And if it's something that the resentment is unjustified, then you need to be able to let go. Same with anger. Arrogance. Depression. This is an interesting thing. People assume that somebody who's depressed can't be arrogant. But others have understood that for some people, depression in and of itself is a form of arrogance, because if you think about it, somebody who's depressed is saying, at least some people who are depressed, not all depressions, but some people who are depressed are saying to themselves, I haven't accomplished anything, I'm never going to amount to anything, I'm empty, I'm worthless. And I think the question is, who asked that person to even have a right to make an evaluation about what they're supposed to ultimately accomplish, right? Their job is to give it over to God and make their best effort and take it from there. They're not responsible for the outcomes. They're responsible for the effort. The person who's depressed is saying, oh, why should I do this? Why should I do that? Nothing good will come from it. I'll never accomplish what I really, am supposed to accomplish. Who asked him to even think about what he's supposed to accomplish? What made him think that he's so big that he should be so small, to paraphrase an old Yiddish saying? So, there's all kinds of distorted thoughts that people have, and that it's not the actions, even though on the scale of things, the Torah considers actions to be a greater avera than thoughts in many respects. And the actions are much more problematic, but that's like, a diabetic who doesn't watch his sugar, eventually, chas v'shalom, could get gangrene, could lose their eyesight. Terrible diseases come from not watching your sugar. Not watching your sugar is a small thing, relatively speaking. Terrible consequences come from it. So a diabetic who needs to have a foot amputated, chas v'shalom, or loses their vision from the diabetes, what are you going to say? Obviously, that's much worse than just not watching your blood sugar. But it all came from not watching the blood sugar. In a similar way, the nefesh is sick. The distorted thinking, the crazy thinking, the unrealistic expectations, the sense of entitlement, the arrogance, the stubbornness, the willfulness, all these things lead the person down the path of trouble, drives the Shekhinah away. Then finally, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Finally, you see a physical manifestation of a rot that was going on all along. Let me just conclude, and I urge you all to look it up, because no summary could do it justice. But the Rambam, in the last part of the Mor Nevuchim in Chelek Gimel, from Perek Nun Aleph and on, sums up what the purpose of life is, what the purpose of the Torah is. And you have to read it many times. It's not something you could read one time to really get the depth and intensity of what he's saying. But in brief, he describes the world in terms of a palace metaphor. It's a famous palace metaphor, and it's really similar to the Beis HaMikdash. And he's saying that there's a king in the palace, in his inner sanctuary. And you have people who live in the village that don't even think about the king. And then you have people that live in the capital city, and they are thinking about the king. And then you have people that maybe are in the courtyard of the king, but they aren't facing the direction of the king. And then you have people that actually make it into the inner sanctum of the king and are able to have a dialogue with him. And according to the Rambam, what's the ultimate level, and who's the one that really is able to go into the inner sanctum of the king and really able to have a dialogue with the king and have the Gilui Shekhinah? It's a person that achieves a particular kind of dveikus. And the dveikus that the Rambam talks about is what he calls being a chacham. Now, being a chacham, according to the Rambam, doesn't mean being smart. And he also talks about it in shows different chazal that explain this as well. And Bederach Klal, anybody who learns the Rambam should know, when you're reading the Rambam in Hilchos Deos and other places, and he uses the word chacham, he does not mean somebody who's smart. He doesn't even really mean somebody who's wise. He means somebody that has the right kind of understanding of midos, and has developed those midos, and then is able to pattern his midos after HaKadosh Baruch Hu's midos, and remain attached to Hashem by doing tzedaka and mishpat, doing righteousness and good deeds, thinking that this is Hashem's will and this is Hashem's way and this is how one should live life. And the Rambam says that to the greater extent a person can be mindful of such, that is the greater level of of dveikus that the person will achieve. That is the greater level of gilui shechina, of being in the kodesh hakodashim, and that is the greater level of hashgacha that the person will receive. That the more a person remains mindful of Hashem's will specifically to do tzedakah, chesed, mishpat, to do kindness, to do justice, and to attach himself to Hashem's ways, and to do this constantly, the more hashgacha, the more divine providence he will experience, because his soul is basically attached to Hashem and being guided by Hashem. And that's, as the Nefesh Chaim says, that's the real base of Migdash. That's the real Kodesh HaKadoshim. V'shachanti b'soichom, and I will dwell in you, not in it. That's the real base of Migdash. So what I'm going to do now is shut off the recording and also open it up for discussion if anybody has any comments or questions.